this is Scott Wells, and here it is on Friday, March the 4th, at the Winter Carnival of Magic in beautiful Pigeon Forge, Tennessee. And I say beautiful because it absolutely is. It must be temperature in the 60s or 70s here today. Short sleeve weather, inside and out, as I'm looking at the beautiful, I guess this is the Smoky Mountains over here. Yeah, it seems to be. Because smoking is just outside, not inside anymore. Anyhow, so I drove up all the way from Houston, Texas, made the long 16-hour drive one day, and got in about 2 o'clock then in the morning, and then we stopped along the way in Lafayette, which one of my favorite restaurants at Prejean's, which was just a fantastic Cajun restaurant. Had some seafood stuffed catfish smothered with crawfish etouffee, and then had some bread pudding with Jack Daniel's. Oh man, it was. If you guys get a chance, you know, just a little food tip along the way. Well, anyhow, that shows had a couple lectures yesterday. Had a lecture first of all kicked off with Carol Baker on restaurant magic, and then Ricky Boone and T.J. Schmeld gave a lecture. Then I had my Now You See It with Scott Wells kind of a talk show thing went well last evening, and then it was as the main show, and then the late night lecture by Tom Craven. Well, right now the Colombinis are talking, and well, actually that's me talking. I'm going to let somebody else chat here for a minute, who was one of my special guests on the talk show last night, Mr. Tom Ladshaw. Hey, Tom.
Scott, how the heck are you? It's so good to see you again.
I'm doing good, and it's good to see you. It's been way too long. And as we talked about last evening, that for those of you who may or may not know Tom Ladshaw, of course, he had written a book called Funny Stuff many, many years ago. What was that, like the 80s?
Maybe? 91.
Okay, close to the 80s. And, of course, has been a long time ventriloquist. So those of you who are in the ventricular field, of course, know Tom and his reputation that precedes him. But he is also, it's interesting that he is traveling currently with Jeff Dunham, who is internationally acclaimed ventriloquist then as well. Tell me a little bit about, you've known him, you were saying last night in the show that you have known him since you were in your teens.
Right, exactly. We first met at one of the early ventriloquist conventions, I believe in 1977. I was 17, Jeff was 15, and we've known each other ever since, and really over about the past 5, 6, 7 years have become really close friends. And I not to give any misconception, I don't travel Jeff full time. I see him from time to time. We get together on the road. We work on some ideas, and we're currently involved in a couple of projects. And he's a good guy to work with and work for and know and go see perform.
And tell me about this feature length documentary movie that you had.
Yeah, okay. A couple of years ago, I was involved in a documentary called I'm No Dummy. It was produced and directed by a West Coast filmmaker by the name of Brian Simon. I came on board as an associate producer and ended up kind of acting as the historian in the film. And it's the first really quality, positive production on ventriloquism ever produced. It's kind of a
small... All the movies seem to be about ventriloquists, like if they're really crazy, or
exactly,
is that they've got a split personality, or the dummy comes to life or something.
Exactly. Yeah. And even the documentaries in the past have kind of focused on ventriloquists that were maybe a little odd, because that's an easy story.
Yes.
You know, it's much harder to do a compelling story about a subject rather than people, and Brian decided to take the tack of telling the story of ventriloquism rather than specific ventriloquists.
Right. And, although there are several ventriloquists featured.
There are featured, exactly.
Like Jeff Dunham.
Like Jeff, Jay Johnson also, Lynn Trefsker, several other people. But it was really very successfully done. We had it in some festivals. It did very well. It's been released through Salient Media. And you can find it in Target, Best Buy, Walmart. So you can get it on Netflix. And it's a very positive portrayal of our history over the past 70, 80 years since really Edgar Bergen.
And again, it's called I'm No Dummy.
It's called I'm No Dummy. Look for it. It's a lot of fun.
And you are not here as a performer, as a ventriloquist. You're actually here as a dealer then?
As a dealer this year. I like to come to the Winter Carnival every couple of years. I still deal a little bit of magic on the side, and this is a fun convention to come to. Great people here. We've been seeing the same people here for years. I actually attended my first Winter Carnival in 1987.
Wow.
So I've been coming here for a long time, and it's a lot of fun.
Yeah, my first and last one was in 93 during the year of the blizzard.
The year of the big blizzard.
In Gatlinburg. Enough to scare me off for a while, but finally came back again, and so it's been a lot of fun. And have you performed in the past, or is this just or always been a dealer or just attended? Or have you...
I'm trying to remember. I don't think I've ever performed here at the Winter Carnival. I think I've always come as a dealer, but they were talking to me this year. I may come next year and do event act for them on one of their shows.
That'd be good. Great. Because it seems like a variety act always just gets great.
The variety act, you know, it's fun to be the variety act at a magic convention because it doesn't matter if you're any good or not. You're gonna go over well. They're going to appreciate it.
Well, they've got a good dealer room set up over here. It's interesting, too, because all activities are taking place in the Country Tonight Theater here in Pigeon Forge. And so they have the dealer set up in the lobby, and they've got, looks like Bob Little and Dazzling Magic, like the Haynes over there at H&R Magic Book, Cosmo and Low Sanders here. Of course, Tom Ladshow, Bamcheck's got stuff selling, Haynes House of Cards. Who else is over there?
Sandy Marshall's here with Magic Inc.
Yep, several of his things.
Bill Pryor is here. It's a nice group, and it's always a varied group, and they're very particular about the dealers they bring in, and it's always a very wide range, and people who don't really tend to compete with each other. So
and they
that's
got
very nice.
A lot of lectures set up. I was noticing, goodness,
you a know, lot one, of lectures. Yeah, there are a lot
just,
of things going.
Really,
on.
Really, it seems like the lecture convention. If anything, I mean, it's just one bang, bang, bang. You know,
they do like to give you your money's worth here, and I think that's why this is for a small convention. It's always well attended. It's very popular, and they've been doing it. This is their 37th year. So they know what they're doing, and it's the same club that puts it on each year.
Yeah.
So they've got it down to a formula, and it's a very good formula.
I think it's Ring 58, I believe, that sponsors
yes,
that.
Yes, Knoxville.
Of Knoxville, right. All right, well, Tommy, thank you very much. It's always good to see you. And by the way, just one quick thing. You had moved to Kentucky after Hurricane Katrina.
After Hurricane
New
Katrina.
Orleans,
I was going to tell you my Prejean story.
Okay.
We spent about a week when we were evacuated in Lafayette.
Yeah.
We were right up the street from Prejean's. These people, let me tell you how nice they were. If you were evacuated from the storm, you could go there for any meal for $3.
Is that right?
$3. And they were very nice people there. They fed us. You got a full meal, a dessert, and a drink for $3. So people in Louisiana are great. They took care of us. But
that is just a great story.
Yeah. We had, and that was always one of our favorite restaurants anyway.
Yeah.
When we go through that area.
Me too.
The fried alligator is the best.
Okay.
So, but we decided, after that storm with the water, we decided we're going to move north. So we got out of Louisiana after a few years. And we're in northern Kentucky, just south of Cincinnati. We love it, and come visit us.
You know, Lee Freed also, didn't he move from...
Lee still has a house there, but he spends most of the year now, he spends about half the year in L.A. He's got a place. His wife now is from Australia.
They spend
a lot of the year in Australia. So he does still have a place in New Orleans. His dad is still there.
Okay.
But he's only there a little bit of the time.
Okay. Sorry to get off on a personal note over there, but always great. Tom, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Great hearing from you again. And so we'll talk with a few other people. I see some folks walking around. We'll chat with... shortly, but for now, this is Scotty out. This is Scott Wells, and I'm here in the lobby still with the Country Tonight Theater, and I'm with Mike Stratman, the treasurer, and the talent chairman for, I started to say this year, but I guess every year at the Winter Carnival.
Forever.
How long have you been doing this? Longer than you'd like to count, I guess.
That's right. At least 12 years, I think.
And this is the number 37th year. And it's continued to grow over the years, and this year you have about how many, you think?
We're hoping we have around 250 here. If we do, it would be one of our better years, because last year was down. We were a little under 200, so this is a boost this year, but I think it's closer to what our norm has usually been.
Now, this has been a convention that has maintained those figures, whereas some conventions have kind of dropped off. Why do you think that is?
Well, I think a lot of it is because of the patrons that we have that have been coming for years. We've got dedicated people that haven't missed one of these conventions in 37 years. We also also try to keep the prices on the convention. The hotel facilities are not as expensive as a lot of other places. And we book what I think is some of the best talent that's available, and plenty of it. So, you know, it's a good combination. This year we tried something different. We booked extra talent. We have more performers this year than we've ever had. And I just think it's a combination of, and maybe people were just wanting to get out this year for a change, you know, because of the economy. They claim up here things are getting a little bit better. The theater has said that they were having a little bit better year. So whatever it is, but we'd love to maintain that 250 attendance.
Now, is that the reason that you'd moved over here from Gatlinburg?
No, Gatlinburg facility had an auditorium in it called a Mills Auditorium, and it was like a gymnasium, really. And this flat seating, poor sound, poor lighting. But anyway, they decided, the good city over there decided to renovate the building and make it more adaptable to more things. So they took the portion we had plus the other portions and just made them into big ballrooms with folding curtains, which didn't suit our venue at all. So that's the reason we left. We had to leave the 1 year for construction because we couldn't be there anyway. But after we found out what they were doing, you didn't have the stage, you didn't have the type of facility we've been used to. And so coming down the country tonight's worked out a lot better.
Great theater, great facility over here, and it's right next to the hotel. Certainly they can walk up the hill, get a little exercise, and the weather's been perfect here.
Plus the fact, you know, there's restaurants within walking distance. The trolley stops out in front, and they can catch the trolley if they want to and ride someplace. It's great for the women because there's a lot of shopping around, and we don't see many women at the convention. Usually of an evening, they show up for the evening show with their spouses, but during the day, you don't see too many wandering around in there.
That's right. Well, good. Well, sounds like things are going well, and I got a good convention going. Most everybody looks like showing up here today, Friday.
Yeah.
And that goes through tomorrow night. What was the most difficult hurdle that you felt like you had this year in trying to book some talent? Or maybe what was the biggest coup in trying to get somebody to come in?
Well, the biggest hurdle is really just that it's just hard to get the talent anymore because, well, first of all, we've lost a lot of the great talents in magic. I mean, Steve Dacry just passed away. We've had several others that have been at the conventions. Yeah, that we've actually had here. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we'd even talked to Dacry about coming back next year before this came up. And, excuse me. But it's an ongoing labor of love booking talent, I'll just guarantee you that. You start off with an A-list of who you'd like and try to put a program together, but you can't get people because they're busy, which is good. And we also, so then you start filling in with the other acts. And I think this year we really filled in with some tremendous acts that are lesser-known acts.
Top talent, and lesser-knowns as well, last evening going to be having Michael and Jessica with the Rhythm of Magic. That's going to be kind of a new act that people haven't seen, but they're going to go home remembering that.
Oh, I hope they do. I'm anxious. I hope they blow us out of this place.
They will. They're going to be great. Well, listen, thank you, Mike Stratman. I appreciate you being on the podcast over here, and thanks also for everything that you have done.
Thank you.
Excellent job. So we'll talk some more with some other guys around the convention, but for now, this is Scotty out. Well, we just finished. This is Scott Wells again. Sorry, we just finished with the lecture with David Acker, and is highly entertaining as usual. And I'm here now with Steve Beam, who's a highly entertaining individual himself in the flesh.
Scott?
I'm doing great. Steve, so good to see you. The reason I wanted to chat with you just a little bit then is about several things. First of all, that how many of these winter carnivals have you attended?
Oh goodness, I think this is the 37th. I believe I've been to all but either three or four.
Wow, because you're not that far away, I guess. Actually,
well, I am now. When I started out attending these things, I was about a four-hour drive. Now I'm about a nine-hour drive, eight- or nine-hour drive,
Okay, a little bit further than what it was before.
Yeah.
Now, you had the magazine of the Trapdoor for a long number of years.
That's
and,
right.
Of course, you got the books on semi-automatic and automatic and all that. What are all the different book titles?
Semi-automatic current tricks, volume 1-8, and then the Trapdoor. Obviously, I did that for 15 years.
Right. And is that in a book form? Have you got the Trapdoor yet?
Well, it's funny you mention that. It's at the printer now, volume 1. they're going to be three volumes ultimately.
There we go.
It'll be out probably by 4F, okay. Which will be next month.
Yeah. And, that's right. April's
coming up. The first volume will be the first 5 years. It's 520 pages and hardbound, collected into a nice nice new edition. And then I hope to have the other couple of volumes out in the next 12 months or so.
I noticed that Dan Harlow is here, and I guess they're now going to be coming out with the last of the Minotaur. Minotaurs also.
Nope. By all of the dealers.
Sounds like we got it.
Raffling those items off tomorrow. I have the raffle tickets over here. You're going to see me around the convention. The raffle tickets are $1 a piece, $6 for $5. The best value is $15 for $10. If you come over here and start...
There you go and get your raffle ticket.
That's the guy who's trying to raise enough money so he can buy a copy of the Trapdoor, the hardbound volume. Yeah.
Because it's not going to be a cheap thing, I guess.
I actually haven't come up with a price yet. It's at the printer now, but probably in the next week or so it'll hit the webpage.
You know, I am so glad that I at least had, on one of the last issues, had something that was published in the Trapdoor.
I was so glad. I remember the item. It was an item with a napkin and a knife. Absolutely, it's a great item, and for really people ought to look it up. No, I mean, it's a clever idea.
Yeah, well, you had so many cards. Everything was cards. I thought, well, let's have something a little bit different.
I was kind of proud every time I could get something other than cards, but, you know, cards are my first love.
Sure.
And so, I mean, there was a lot of miscellaneous stuff in there, but I was very choosy with the non-card items that went in there because, frankly, I like cards better, and if it's a mediocre miscellaneous item, I'd rather have a card trick in there instead of that.
Sure.
So it's got to be a great miscellaneous item. I thought your idea was very clever.
Yeah.
It's penetration through the and restoration through a
napkin.
Yeah.
That's right. Yeah. Well, thank you. I forgot about that until you just mentioned it.
And that's
about
been
this.
About, my gosh, 13, 14 years ago.
You got quite a memory.
So it's a good item.
Thank you. As I'm starting to say, though, I see Dan Harlow. I didn't even recognize him at first with the kind of a mohawk and a long ponytail.
Yeah, I kind of got the reverse mohawk thing going. See, his hair is in the center, mine's going in
the
center.
Yours
going
to the
edges. Yeah, put us together and we got a full head of hair.
Well, then you can do the comb over. If you let it grow long in the sides like that, then you can kind of go with what he's got in the back end.
Good thought. Comb, what is that? It's been a long time, you've got to understand.
It's a thing on the top of a chicken, I think.
Oh, gotcha, okay.
So, anyhow, I noticed that he's got the last issue of the Minotaur.
Already out.
Finally, yes.
Oh, excellent, yeah. Well,
after 15 years?
We can finally complete the long run of the bull, right?
That's right, all that bull.
Yeah.
So this is, I was talking with Mike Stratman a little bit earlier, and he was saying about how that there are more, he has more talent and lectures and everything, I guess, this year than in previous years. So, I mean, like, it's just a machine gun, one thing after the other. There are a lot of entertainers. Have you noticed that as well?
Actually, no, but then I was in one of those previous years as a performer, so probably,
okay.
No, in fact, I'm thinking it's just a notch down from about 3 years ago.
But it was really good.
It was really, really
okay.
Good, but now it's better than usual, but just a notch down from 3 years ago. Yeah.
Enough about me, let's talk about you.
Well, there you go, pretty much. it's a great convention. I think so, and this year he's done a heck of a job putting the talent together.
Yeah.
Good variety, good people, good bodies, and folks that, for the most part, haven't been here before.
And now, of course, I've not been since 93 when he had the blizzard, and there was completely different weather now. I mean, my goodness, it's like 70 degrees out there and sunshiny. Is it an iffy thing every year as far as weather goes?
You know, I've been up here probably, I guess, five times when it snowed.
Oh, is that all?
Yeah, but so it's not really that bad, you know, this time of the year, except that when it did snow, that was at 93 that we got the 30 inches.
Right, that was it.
And that was in Gatlinburg, as
you
recall.
Here.
Oh, I was there.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
In fact, and we got snowed in to Gatlinburg. You couldn't actually leave Gatlinburg on Sunday. Yeah. You had to wait till Monday.
Right. So we extended the convention another day.
Yeah, and in fact, I was on the show, the extra show they put on.
I remember that.
Night.
And you did the snowball thing.
Exactly.
The multiplying snowballs.
Yeah. And the color changing. And
killer.
The color changing. Yeah.
Yes.
And the
yellow
and
snow.
What was funny is, Diane Maney came up to me after that show, and she said, I'd like to book that in November for the Atlanta Harvest. And she was serious. And I said, Diana, it's only funny if it snows down there, so you can do a conditional booking, and that's about the only thing we can do. So
it has to have some sort of a provision in your contract to make sure it snows.
Well, there you go. There you go. And I can't imagine getting snowed into Atlanta either when everybody's kind of forced. It was one of those things that was a one-time deal. But,
right.
But they asked me about 5 p.m. if I'd be on the 8 p.m. show, so I went out and bought a cooler, and I bought food coloring,
yeah.
And then shoveled up the snow, and I had an act.
You did. I forget, but that was hilarious, and I published it was hilarious. Remember we were talking about? He said, "No, say that I'm hilarious."
Oh, yeah, yeah,
in Magic Magazine.
Exactly.
When I was doing the convention column.
I remember that. Boy, that's been a long time. Yeah.
We've been friends for way too long.
Yeah. Yes, we have.
But anyhow, this has been a great convention. I've been enjoying it. I've been each day. I've got something I've been doing. I'm on the show again tonight as I'm emceeing the show. And then tomorrow morning is my lecture. So that's why I think this year is great.
Of course. And, you know, so I see where this came from. Mike Stratman had nothing to say about this, did he? Yeah. In fact, he was cussing to me last night saying, you know, I booked these guys from all over. They get here and they're just not so good when they get here, you know.
I had high expectations, but you know.
Well, that's okay. You know, as from Texas.
There we go. Well, many of us came up from Houston, you know, for this. So we had.
Right. And he thought from if they were all the way from Houston, they'd be better, but you know.
Got a long drive home then, you know.
Right.
Anyhow, Steve Beam, thank you very much. I appreciate it. Looking forward to the trapdoor finally coming back out then, too, for the final episode.
Thanks a lot, Scott. Good talking with you.
You too, buddy. This is Scotty out. Scott Wells. Oh, I've got Dwayne Laughlin with me here today. Hello, Dwayne.
Hi.
We are about to go in for the stage contest that you and I are both going to be judging that, and you are much more qualified as a stage magician, and you have had a stage act here in Pigeon Forge for a while, and then you're going to be starting a new one. Tell me about the evolution, about how you came here from Montana. This is a long story, I know. Just
to tell briefly, but in Montana we had a theater, but we performed 3 months a year, and then because of the Montana winters, 9 months a year I still was on the road.
Yeah.
And in the middle of a road trip, we were here in Pigeon Forge, just taking a break, and it's a longer story, but the essence is I got an opportunity to get into a theater here 12 months a year, versus my 3 months in Montana.
And you could stay in one place all year
right.
round.
So we were able to sell the theater in Montana, and I've been here in Magic Beyond Belief for almost 2 years.
Wow.
And then...
How big of a theater, by the way? How many
Magic
seats?
Beyond Belief seats, 530.
Okay.
But a developer came across a couple months ago and bought our theater and the one on either side. He's going to knock them down and build a water park.
Okay.
So I went from full-time work
to no
work. So I started January with absolutely no bookings because I'd been booked solid. And that'll change. But we just signed a contract 2 weeks ago, and now we're in the Grand Majestic Theater here in Pigeon Forge. We open March 29th with a full-scale illusion show that's going to run 5 days in the slow season and 7 days a week in the busy season.
Now, the magic show that you had before had how many people working with you? I mean, it's assistants and everybody.
Well, it was a big operation that was under a corporation, and you know we had 42 people employed, and I had 4 assistants plus a stage manager plus an animal trainer plus a host of the show plus all the people down front.
Oh, you're saying animal trainer? You had like big cats and things?
Yeah, tigers and a serval cat and a variety of exotic animals.
So what do you do? I mean, like whenever they close that, I mean, you're thinking, what am I going to do with all these animals? Because that's not something you can really take on the road, I wouldn't think.
It isn't, but because it was a corporate thing, I didn't own them. The animal trainer owned the animals and managed them, and so I worked with them, and I missed them because I enjoyed the animals and the audience loves them. But the animals are costly, and the new show is a different budget. I don't have a corporation backing me this time, so I can't afford the tigers right now.
You're not four-walling us, I guess, though, are you?
Not essentially four-walling, but taking a lot of the responsibility myself, which I want.
So that because called two-walling or three-walling? Or
something like that,
Because
I want to be my own boss.
Okay.
And,
like you were back in Montana. Then.
Right.
Yeah. Okay.
And I love my experience at Magic Beyond Belief, but having had both, I'm very excited. This new show, I call the shots.
And
all of them.
Has it been built from the ground up, so it's really more of a magic theater, or is it something that's existing?
It's
just converting.
1,200 seat theater, the Grand
more
Majestic.
More than twice as
and a gorgeous theater, a huge thing.
Okay,
Right now there's another show in it, America's Hit Parade, and actually we'll be sharing it, which means some days they'll do evenings and I'll do the matinees, and then on the weekends I do the evening shows and they do the matinees.
Gotcha. Okay. So, and again, this opens on March
29th.
Okay.
Way too soon.
I'm sure you're prepared, but even...
I wish. The young ladies you see here, we just hired them on Tuesday, so they've not even rehearsed yet. We're just that early in it all.
Okay. Well, we probably need to get in there to start judging over there. That's right. Thank you, Dwayne. Appreciate it. Good luck with the show. I know that you're going to do well, as you have in the past over there.
Need the prayers. I feel good about it. And we have, you know, for friends who worry about these things, I've done my homework.
Yeah.
I always wonder, do you know...
you're getting into. I know what I'm getting into. Yeah, it's not your first rodeo.
No, and I know that there's as much chance for it not to go as to go. I think the show will be great, but marketing's the issue.
And yeah, that's always. Yeah, and this is a big market here to try to market to
very all competitive
that
market.
Very good. Dwayne, thanks again.
I appreciate it.
This is Scotty out.
Scott Wells, and we are actually over here at Steve Gronowski. Gronowski's home, which is what, like 25,000 square foot palace or something here? It's,
palatial is all I call it.
Palatial, it is incredible. I'm here.
There's
with
not
Steve,
a ruler big enough to measure.
Steve Ward, Tom Vorjahan, then right now, we're at Steve Gronowski's place. And you hear in the background over that looks like Doc Eason is holding
Doc
court.
Doc is boarding court. Yeah, there's what, 40 people surrounding him?
That's right. I was just talking to Michael Finney just a second ago, and I said, can I chat with you? And he said, yeah, it's fine. He said, I'm getting ready. However, he's going to start to give us a little bit of a tour of his mansion. And let's talk about this mansion a little bit, because this is kind of off the beaten track. And not part of the regular.
Yeah, when you take that second turn and you turn down that gravel road,
you're wondering.
I know
what
that
kind
everybody
of
behind me is going. I hear banjo music. Everybody. And,
yeah.
And when you see that pond and that next turn, and you go, what is Vorjahan cooking up for us?
Yeah.
And you finally end up back here, it's like an oasis. It's yeah. just incredible.
It is. And he's got all of these old antique kinds of...
I mean, you're
of,
looking at 12-foot ceilings. You're looking at $150,000 worth of ceiling.
And he has Al Capone's car out in the garage.
Yeah. He's got a couple things. He's sold motorcycles to Leno. He's... there's nothing this man hasn't done.
Quite interesting.
Started out as an electrician.
Yes.
And helped construct the Sears Tower. Bought his first slot machine for $300, fixed it, and sold it for $900. He goes, I think I could do this again. Buys three slot machines for the $900, sells them for $2,700.
Then there's some money in this.
Yeah. And so what ends up happening is he starts the Chicago Coin-Op Fair and ends up getting that to a twice-a-year event, sells it, moves down here to... finds a place where he can see the mountains and see everything, you know, and goes out with a realtor, and the realtor says, hey, I think I forgot a place for you, and we're going to build 9 houses on the end of this cul-de-sac.
He's got like 14 lots, and he said, I'll take them all.
And he says, I take them all.
Yeah.
And this is what he built. If you stand at one end of the workshop, you can't see the under end of the workshop because of the curvature of the earth.
Don Weiberg was telling me when they came down from Chicago, I guess, they had like 7 moving vans full pilgrim, you know, there's full vans of all this stuff.
Well, and what's funny is we invite all the performers, the dealers and stuff, to come out here, and I feel like I'm selling Amway soap every freaking year.
Yeah.
And I can just hear the comments in people's heads behind me as they're following me out.
Well, when I was talking to Finney, he said, I don't know, you know, I heard it's like a half hour to drive over to this guy's house, and what's this about? And I said, well, I heard it's great. This is my first time here.
And he's not even a member of our ring. Just a friend.
Really?
A real friend of magic. No, we meet on poker night, and damn it, he needs to make some more money. You can't afford to have a party for $200.
And he's got these posters, looks like, you know, kind of framed around the downstairs here, too.
Well, every piece in here has a story, Scott.
I'm sure it does.
You can't...
There's a barber pole, I'm sure, has something right there.
It has a story. I mean, the little man over there is it's hydraulic, and it's from the 1920 World's Fair. I mean, every piece in this house has a story.
Wow.
Wait till you see the workshop. I mean, it ain't
a workshop. Well, he told me he builds. I mean, he makes
he
woodworking.
Yeah, I mean, my favorite story of all time is when we brought Shutagawa out here. And Shoot standing here, and Steve, to talk to the group, is up on a JLG lift, one of three that he has in the workshop. And he's sitting up on the JLG, and he's trying to talk to everybody. And Shoot's going, Tom, what does he do? I said, he's retired. No. What did he do
to
do this? And I go, Steve. And I'm yelling across this room.
Yeah.
And he goes, I said, Steve, my friend Shoot would like to know what you're doing. He goes, ask him if he's ever been to Disney Japan. And I said, have you ever been to Disney Japan, Shoot? And he goes, yeah. And I said, yes, he has. And he goes, ask him if he remembers walking down Main Street and seeing those games along the road, along that Main Street, all the machines.
Yeah.
I said, do you remember those? He goes, yeah. I said, yes, he does, Steve. And he goes, tell him they all came from here.
And he made it. Yeah.
That's a Scotty chant.
Listen to that. Doc is just
eating this up.
He is. He has just got a ton of people. I mean, it's just a happening event here.
See, and there was no soap involved.
And here is Carol Baker, by the way. Carol.
Hey, how you doing, guys?
Hey, doing great.
Good.
Hey, Carol had done a lecture also then yesterday.
Yep. It was a great lecture. I had about 60 people there. It was great. It was the first lecture of the convention, and it was a lot of fun just to get here and get started.
This is your first?
My very first time, yes.
What did you think of it?
I loved it, and I'm going to be back again. This is great.
Well, they invite you.
No, I've been invited. I just plan on coming back. I like it enough, I'll come down and do it for free.
Yeah. This is awesome. Hey, Cosmo. You want to say a little something?
Sure. What do you want me to say?
Ah, I got Cosmo over here then, too. That's, what do you think? The doc just did a little...
Killer. Great stuff.
I thought you were going to start doing something all of a sudden there.
Oh, no. I've
this
had...
This is not a street. This is a bar.
This is a bar. Well, I'd look foolish going against Doc Easton one night.
Tell me about Real Magic. So you've been doing that for how long? Now, this is the third
five
year?
Five years, yeah. We started about 5 years ago.
Quarterly?
Yeah.
And then went to bi-monthly.
Yeah, 6 times a year. Yeah,
okay.
February, April, June, August, yeah.
Now, I know you do, of course, known for, as a street magician, but then how'd you get into video recording and all this kind of stuff?
I'd go out on the road and I'd work, and I was a broadcast engineer before I became a street performer.
Oh.
So I started working. When I met Cellini, I helped Cellini out and produced a couple products for him so that he could go out and lecture because he, was needed to do that at that point in his life. And, we did a pretty good job on those. So people started to ask us again, to come in and ask us to do projects for them, and that's how it started. So I'd come off the road from traveling, from street performing, I'd come off the road and give me something to do when I was home for 2 or 3 weeks at a time. I'd work on a project and go back out.
Yeah.
And that's out. And then I got this idea to do this video magazine, and I started that. And now it's taken up my life, and I don't street perform nearly as much as I used to. But still, Scotty, still got the chop 75 days a year. I can still do it with the best of them, maybe. Well, with a few of them. Well, all right, not that good. All right, let's get right down to it. You told me I sucked the other day. I wasn't great. Don't come and watch me. I'm not good. So.
But you're going to be teaching a few people, I guess, a workshop on Sunday. Is that right?
I am. Yeah. Who would pay to come and see me? What are they, crazy?
Yeah, when they listen to this later, they're going to say,
That's be $5 well spent, I'll tell you that right there. And this is quite the place we're in right here, isn't it?
It is. And I was going to go over here and talk to Doc over here.
All right. Doc,
yep.
All right.
So, Doc, I was going to talk with you also again.
Oh, hello, everybody out there in Radio Land.
So it looks like that right now that you finally took a break. I mean, you started doing something, everybody started kind of gathering around. I mean, you could gather a crowd. That's why I thought Cosmo was
better. Well, it's Doc Easton. I can't do it. No, that's Doc Easton.
Let me bend over directly up my head.
Give me a break. Who's going to watch me when Doc Easton's working?
I mean, my goodness, there were like 50 people around you all of a sudden. I thought, what's going on over there? Everybody's chanting your name,
No, it wasn't chanting my name. Scott.
Oh, that was me they were chanting.
You, Scott.
They were chanting your name, however it wasn't for you.
Okay.
Yeah.
Leave. He needs to leave.
No, it was, that's what happens, you start playing and people gather around.
Yep.
This was a tough room because everybody had seen that,
Oh, you're great, man.
But I stuck it by you about 4 times at least. And you missed the final one when I went under the...
Now you're doing a 3-card Monty. Is that what you're doing there or what?
Yeah, the 3-card Monty. And the 3-card Monty has a way of ending up, it's another callback.
Card under glass.
6 times goes back and back and back and back.
Card under glass.
Yeah. Is this what you were...
Card? Six times.
Under card glass.
Under the goddamn...
Fooled me every damn time. You know why? Because he's Doc Easton. Doc Beep Easton. That's who he is. That's right.
I got to send him a check. Can I run my credit card through this little thing?
You have that little square up thing. Yeah, that's right.
We're having a time of our lives here in the Winter Carnival.
Isn't it fun? This is a cool convention.
If you're just listening to this, then you're missing out. But it's too late to make this year.
You're late.
So they should come then.
That's
right. Bob Little just joined us. Hey, Bob.
I have one of your clown cars that was been around the clown hot bar.
My Great Scott Clown.
Yes.
That's right.
Can anybody tell that Bob Little's drunk off his ass?
He was playing pool on the 1700 pool. That was built? There was a 1787 or something?
Gene.
Yeah. Which you were just playing on over there a while ago?
Oh, yeah, over there.
An antique pool table.
I used to play pool a lot.
Did you? I thought you were going to do some trick shots or something. something over there.
Yeah, well, I miss them a lot now, but I played a lot of tennis. I played professional tennis when I was real young.
Is that right? You played professional
California,
tennis?
Yeah.
I mean, like, for money. I mean, not just trophies.
No, for
in California.
Money. Yeah, California. Yeah. And L.A. Yeah, all through California, yeah.
Now, how old were you then?
In my 20s, middle 20s.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then you, and then how'd you get out of that? Or what? So you moved from there to Magic?
Well, gradually, I worked for Union Carbide when I graduated from Penn State. I couldn't play tennis at Penn State because I was professional. But when I graduated from college, Union Carbide recruited me from campus.
Yeah.
And I worked for them for about 2 years until they wanted to relocate me, and I didn't want to leave where I was in Pittsburgh. And so I quit Union Carbide, and I went with,
some other
Air
company.
Products. Okay. Air Products. Oh, I can't think of Air Products. Which was
is that like Air Liquide?
Which was close to my home. Mm-hmm. And I lived there, and then I met Barbara at a tennis tournament. And she was with a great guy that had a red MG, and she always used to kid me that I gave up a beautiful red MG from a sports car for you. That was always a funny thing. And then I went into... I was always in Magic as a hobby. And
since you were a kid, I assume.
Yeah, since junior high school. So I said, I forgot, she taught at our Hatboro High School English, and she taught seniors, and I said, give me 1 year to try it, and I lived off of her salary for a year, and my first order was from Dick Hember in New York.
Oh.
He gave me my
Richard
first
Hember.
Order, Richard
yeah,
Dick.
Hember Ring, Hember. Yeah. He was the band director.
Well, yeah, he was Pepsi-Cola's band director. He had an orchestra, a Pepsi orchestra. He lived at the Hember House, at the Essex House in New York. I used to sit on a living room floor, help folding his $100 silks and mailing out his
wow.
Hember wallets.
Yeah.
Years ago, yeah, it was in the late 50s or maybe early 60s. I don't know. But yeah, God, these memories are just fantastic. Yeah, unbelievable.
One thing to another.
We don't live long enough. That's what bothers me.
Incredible.
Wow. Yes, I remember that car you had. And today it's an antique, that little thing that would spin around, and it would stop, and I think a clown popped out of it.
That was a little, that's right, kind of like a little jack-in-the-box kind
jack
of thing.
Jack-in-the-box.
Yes.
I couldn't think of that. That was it. Yes. Yes.
And
yes,
I made
I
those.
And
you were,
of
that's
them.
Right, that's my first commercial venture, and you were
really?
The guy. Yes, you were the one who
wow.
sold it for me. Yeah. You sold them all over the world.
Yeah, sold quite a few. Yeah.
Well, thank you, Bob, amazing. Very much.
Eventually, they sell.
I'm here with Steve Granowski right now, who is the owner of the home. I just want to thank you very much again, as I said, while ago about opening your home. And so we're in the warehouse right now. This is your building, your workshop, basically.
Well, my warehouse and workshop, yes.
So you do a little bit of everything. Now, these are like slot machines, and what kind of, what are we looking at right
well,
now?
Well, these primarily are antique replicas of antique penny arcade machines, machines that were made in the teens and 20s.
Okay. But they're replicas of that.
They're
that
replicas
you, okay.
of them that I've reproduced, and we sell them to restaurants and amusement parks
oh,
and
I
collectors.
Oh, I got it. Okay. So they put in a penny or a quarter or something?
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what do they do, actually?
These machines are antique. You know, by today's standards, they're prehistoric dinosaurs.
Yeah.
They're not video games. I mean, this is low technology.
Yes.
These machines vended a little card with your love letter on it.
Okay.
Big deal, you know.
Yeah.
Those machines also are fortune teller machines.
Is this like a Madame Zora kind of thing? Okay.
Yeah, like on the movie Big.
Yes, exactly.
Same type of things.
Okay.
Yes.
And so you call them what? Gold mine?
Well, this particular machine is called a donkey in the gold mine, and I don't know if you saw the one in the house.
No, I didn't.
You should go put a penny in it and try it. It's really
okay.
neat. It's a fortune-telling machine, but you put a penny in, and a little donkey comes out pulling a cart.
Okay.
He comes around, turns in the front, and tips the cart up
yeah.
and delivers your little gold brick, which is a gold-colored fortune card.
Okay.
That's really cool. And I watched over there. Rick Merrill there.
And that's the machine. I mean, again, you got to remember that's 1929 technology.
The one in there is the original one.
No, it's
one of the reproductions also.
One of the reproductions I made back in 1980.
Okay.
Yeah, I made a bunch of them in 1980, and I saw one on eBay. In 1980, I was selling them for $2,500. I saw one on eBay for $9,500, and I said, it's time to make some more. So
Yeah.
Did you buy anything from Svoboda's?
I bought a lot of stuff from Svoboda's when he closed.
Okay.
In fact, the antique streetlights that were out in front were in my house in Barrington Hills in my driveway. Remember those antique streetlights? They were 1902.
Marty, got a question?
No, I was.
Okay.
I just was noticing that he's into woodline products, and I buy some of the same router bits and tables and things like that. I'm a craftsman.
I'm a tool junkie.
Yeah, me too. I just love tools.
Lots of tools in here, I could see, that's for sure. This is awesome.
Turn me loose in this shop, I'll produce you some stuff.
Thank you, Steve, very much.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you.
Would you honor us with a photo?
Sure.
This is Scotty out.
Put it on your feet, Scotty.
Okay, you can hear this in the background over here. This is his mighty Wurlitzer organ that he has repaired and got working. Just another one of the many incredible coin-operated machines. You know, when I was on my Chicago's Magical Mystery Tour, which been posted over here, we'd gone into Michigan to Marvin's Marvelous Magical Machines, I think it was. And he said that he had sold several of his machines over there to Marvin. This is pretty incredible, though. Again, just one of the many things. Just perhaps the loudest of them all. So I'm not going to spend too much more time bothering your ears. I need to move away from this over there. This is just too incredible over by the large bar. I'm surprised the doc's not working the bar, but I guess he couldn't at this with this kind of magnitude of noise. Scotty out for a minute. Hold it. Let me just ask you. Okay. Tell me about the Wurlitzer there, Steve.
It's a 1927 Wurlitzer 153 band organ. Came out of some amusement park in Pennsylvania. I'm not sure which one. But it was made in 1927. And a friend of mine bought it in the 50s, restored it, and he passed away, and I bought it from his wife in the 80s, and I've had it since.
That's not ever going to be for sale. I assume that's just your private collection kind of a thing.
It's, yeah, it's
personal
one of those
memories.
Yeah, I love it. I mean, you know. Everything's for sale, but
but that is awesome. Yeah. Wow. That's got to be the loudest thing you've got here.
No, the calliopes out there in the barn are twice as loud.
Oh, no.
Is the that brass calliopes?
Yes, I saw that.
They were made to let everybody know the circus was in town.
Okay.
And you can hear those blocks away.
Yeah.
To listen to the calliope, you have to take it out of the barn, turn it on, close the doors, and go back in the barn, and it's listenable.
Now, where is the one, by the way, with the donkey? You said there's something.
Oh, right back on this wall here. It's called a donkey in a gold mine.
Okay.
Go take a look at it and put a penny in it.
Yeah.
I got to go relieve Tom in the barn.
Yeah, okay. Thanks, Steve. All right, we'll go see the donkey in the barn. Now let's go take a look at the donkey in the barn over here. Have you seen the donkey in the barn? Steve was telling us about this. Come on. Got to go over and check this out over here. Everybody's trying the different coin-operated machines, and he's also got lots of magic sets, and what is this? It looks like not just, holy cow, Gilbert Misto magic sets. Yes? Oh, he's got the erector sets, chemistry sets, and they're all on display. Like, did you want to buy them or something? Glass blowing?
Glass blowing.
Glass blowing, yeah. Yeah, yeah, exactly. There's a microscope. Oh, goodness, I haven't seen an erector set since I can't remember when. All right. Anyhow, I'm going to let you go over here for a minute then. This for a while. This is going to be Scotty out.
People got that the first day when I wasn't here.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
That's an awesome
over.
Trick. I'm sorry. I'm Scott Wells just sitting here chatting with Dan Harlan. Dan, it's great to see you then again,
Scott.
My friend.
Hey, everybody. All right, good.
So we're here live on the last night of the of this. Now, I understand that you were here a little bit early also, and you were doing a shoot for...
That's right. That's right. I came in the night before. Actually, we came in a little bit before that, but the night before the convention started, we were shooting something for an upcoming project of mine that's called Speakeasy.
Yes.
And Speakeasy is my version of the two-person code act that just about anybody can learn in about an hour. And I know that will surprise anybody who's ever tried to learn a code act.
Well, why can I do a code act?
To learn something that you can actually start working with in an hour is amazing. If you're going to take it to the advanced level on stage, it might take you a whole week of rehearsal with whoever your partner's going to be. But a week to do a code act, I know it sounds outrageous and unbelievable, but I've boiled it down to about 7 basic pieces of information that you can exchange with one another that you can expand to just about anything. So Speakeasy will be coming up about mid this year, I'd say. Look for it around June.
Okay, like a DVD.
Yes. So we were in, we were performing performing Wednesday night, doing the Kodak itself, the big stage version of it, and then we also filmed Thursday all the explanations. Then we're going back to perform some more like casual performances of it. It really has a lot of things that you can do with it besides just the second sight. Second sight, of course, is any object that anybody has, but I've expanded it so we can do all kinds of things, you know, colors and serial numbers on bills.
Oh, really?
And yes,
okay.
And ESP symbols and drawing duplication, lots of different things.
Now, how did you evolve from like cartoon, you know?
Yeah, to doing that, you know, I'm a mentalist at heart, I guess.
So actually, maybe
I'm a mentalist at mind and a magician at heart.
There you go.
But yeah, I think so. I've always had a pretty logical way of looking at things, and people who know me really well know a lot of that my magic is even based on mathematical principles. Mm-hmm. So it works really well for me to also design mentalism because I like some of the subtle psychology that's behind it.
Sure, right. Now, also, I was talking actually with Steve Beam a little bit earlier, and I was telling him about the Last Minotaur coming out. So then I was talking with Marv Lipthal just at the Columbus Magi Fest, and he was telling me that
the Minotaur magazine, for those who don't know,
exactly. Explain that.
Is we published this great magazine that was very eclectic, had a whole bunch of different things in it. Our motto was basically not to have too many card tricks.
Right.
We would always have something different, maybe one card trick per issue. We tried to get the best magic that was different, something that you wouldn't normally see in a magic magazine.
And that was back when the newsletters, for an example, those little things included Apocalypse. And
Apocalypse Trapdoor by Steve Beam.
What was Richard Kaufman's also?
The Almanac, exactly. And we were among those.
Yes,
we were among,
right, exactly.
Among the cutting edge, the bleeding edge leaders of the newsletter magic that, you know, now you'll get a lot of that online, you know, through the blogs or through the other websites. They're basically doing the same thing that we had done, but in a different medium, which I think, you know, is a great way to do it. But the Minotaur ceased publication kind of suddenly about 10 years ago with one issue that was remaining, Ode to Our Subscribers.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Marv would constantly get inquiries, where is the last issue and what's going on with it? So we have, over the course of those years, been trying to put out that last issue and just never quite got around to putting the whole thing together.
Yeah.
So eventually we decided, now it's the modern age, let's not do it in print form, let's do a DVD for the last issue. So anybody that we owe a last issue to that was a previous subscriber, all you have to do is go to this email address. It's theminotaur@me.com, and just make sure that we have your current address and you'll get this automatically. So when you go there, if you're not a subscriber, we'll check you against our subscriber list won't get anything for free.
Yeah.
But if you are a subscriber, we'll make sure that we update your address and you'll get it automatically. So it's a full DVD with 25 new tricks on it. It's about 3 hours long. Now, the interesting part about it is that it's shot like a movie. There's a sub-story behind it that explains why the Minotaur was so late. Now, I will tell you that the story isn't real. It's completely made up. It involves robots and costumes and disguises and intrigue and some weird stuff that makes it a lot of fun to watch.
Yeah.
It was really fun to shoot it, too.
And that's going to be available when?
Well, it's at the duplicator right now, so it'll be available
like in
a couple
month.
Of weeks. Yeah.
A couple weeks,
yeah,
okay,
couple
by
weeks.
The end of March.
Sure,
so.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So if this gets run a little bit late, it's going to probably be available by the time that this airs.
There you go. Right. So, yeah, exactly. You'll have heard about it by other avenues as well. It'll be advertised everywhere. And hopefully, you know, if you haven't gotten one by now, by the time you're hearing this, get one. Come to my website, danharlandmagic.com. Order it from me.
Now, I want to go back to cartoon for a minute.
Okay.
That you had another iteration of that. I mean, there was the one with the little stick figure, but wasn't there something else that also...
There were three of them.
Okay.
There was cartoon, the original one where he pulls the card out of his hat. There was cartoon 2 where he gets shot out of a cannon, grabs it from the air. And there was the best one of all, Fart-toon. Cartoon where he eats a taco and then he bends over and a little puff of magic comes out of his nether regions and forms the card.
Mm-hmm. But cartoon was the the progenitor, I guess, of all that, that helped
all
you
of
build
that.
A house.
Well, yeah, it bought a couple of cars for me and a house, and it, you know, not bad for a card trick.
Not bad for a card trick. Now, do you still get something off that? I mean, so I'm sure that's a question people ask. Or
the
do you
rights, the rights to Cartoon were sold actually quite a few years ago. I don't know exactly how many, but they were sold off at a reasonable price. I mean, if you come up with good magic, you want to make sure you get
sure.
some value out of it.
Sure.
So I'm no longer directly profiting from it, but that's no reason why you shouldn't get one.
Yeah.
You know, you should still enjoy and support the other people who do have it. Fun Inc.
Right.
owns it.
Right.
It's now become part of the Royal line. You know, when I was a kid getting into magic, I always
oh, sure,
bought Royal magic tricks and thought it was great. Now I get to be part of it. How cool is that?
Cool. Yeah. Well, now you got a lot of other cool products, I guess. And so what are you working on or what's happening? You're living in Vegas or where are you then?
No, I'm living in Ohio. Still
Ohio, okay.
Planning on going to the West Coast just as soon as I can, you know, but having a good time still being in Ohio and doing a lot of video projects while I'm there. Talked about Speakeasy, which is coming up. We just finished the Minotaur at the Duplicators. We've got another project called A Little R&B. It's my cool tricks that it can be done with a red blue back card.
Yeah.
So look for that. Little R&B's coming out pretty soon. I got a few of the other ones in the works that are like at this point untitled projects, but we're really keeping busy filming a lot of things.
But are you doing some more corporate work? Or are you doing
evening shows, or
what are you doing as far as
basically just doing private gigs, corporate work that comes up, anything that is in the Ohio and Michigan area. And Michigan's pretty active. It's kind of a resort town. And I've got an agent who books me all over from Traverse City all the way down to Detroit.
And have you been like on a lecture tour or out?
We did tour a little bit last year. We went about half of the year. We were trying to hit as many places as possible. We did the East Coast to the Mid-South region.
Yeah.
Didn't get to the West at all. You know, I think the furthest west we went was three dates in Texas. That was it. Yeah.
Okay. And so you're planning on doing anything this year overseas or anything? Perhaps?
I hope so.
Yeah.
I hope so, yeah. I would absolutely love to. Don't have anything planned now, but I love to travel.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Okay. I didn't know if you... Have you ever worked in Blackpool and done...
I did, many years ago when it was still one day. When it was a one-day convention.
Yes.
And, that's my recommendation. Go back to the one-day format because all conventions are stretched out to like 3 days and you get loopy like this by the end of the third day. But if you pack everything into one day, then everybody is crazy all at the same time. It's perfect. Perfect for magic.
Yeah, because everybody has to buy it now because it's not going to be there tomorrow.
Yeah, you have to see it when it's happening. You have to get it now.
Right.
And it's fine. And then you can go out and have fun after you're done.
Have you been to this convention before? Or is
this one, I was booked here about 10 years ago. And that's the only other time that I've been to this convention.
So
that's
now when you're
it was
just
held,
a dealer.
That's when it was held up in Gatlinburg.
Right.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
You're just a dealer. You're a dealer this time, not a performer?
That's right. Because I was coming to Gatlinburg to shoot that video project, I wasn't really even planning on attending.
Yeah.
And then it just occurred to us, we're there 2 days before the convention.
Sure.
Why don't we come over to the convention and have some fun?
Now, why Gatlinburg? I mean, from Ohio to come down and shoot it here.
Oh, well, because we have a friend, John D., who's a hypnotist in Gatlinburg, has a show there and a theater there, and he was kind enough to allow us to use that theater. And he's interested in the two-person act, so we wanted to teach him while we were here, trying to do as many things as possible at the same time.
Awesome. Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, Dan, thank you very much. Always good
pleasure.
to talk to you, my friend.
Great talking to you.
Looking forward to all the new projects coming out, particularly knowing more about the next one that's going to be, what was that again, the site?
Called Speakeasy.
Speakeasy. Mm-hmm. Looking forward to that.
All right. Awesome.
Thank you very much. This is Scotty out. Scott Wells. We're over in the Comedy Barn right now. We're just kind of taking a little break, and I've got J.C. Doty with me. Many of you guys are fans of J.C. J.C., do you remember Doty from forever? And how many times have you been here, Doty?
We missed the last four. I had a triple bypass and was in the hospital.
Yep.
I was in a nursing home 13 months. So,
I remember hearing about that.
Yeah. So I've been to probably 26 of them.
But you're doing pretty well now. It's fine, everything.
Yeah, we had a good friend, Joe Morrison, drove us up in and bringing us here.
So, how far is this from Atlanta, then?
Oh, gosh, I don't know. The mileage took us about 5 hours, I think, to get here a little longer.
Now, you had, we were just talking about some neon lights and everything that you had made, like, for Tom Foolery. How'd you ever meet Tom Mullica? How'd you get hooked up with him to begin with?
He was, had come down to Atlanta from, Abbott's Magic. He worked there. Ab Dixon brought him down here to do a show that Ab did in shopping centers.
Yeah.
And Tom got tired of it and didn't like it, so he went to bartender school. And then he got a job at the Abbey, which was a very fancy nightclub restaurant in Atlanta.
Right.
And he got doing a little magic there. Then he decided he wanted to open his own place, so Clarence Foster's was a restaurant on Peachtree Street that had a little oyster bar that was not being used. Sit about 40 people. So he opened done tomfoolery there. But one night, he must have had 100 people in there. You couldn't stir them. And the fire marshal came. And he told Tom, you got to get these people out of here. And so Tom said, all right, everybody out. But wait a minute, let me show you a trick.
To the fire marshal, you mean?
No, to the crowd.
Okay.
He done that two or three times, and they fined him. Then he decided he wanted to open his own place, and he got a GI loan, which I was surprised to get a GI loan to open my bar.
I saw that.
And so he lived with us while we were building it.
And what year would this have been? About 70-something?
Oh, gosh, yeah. I can't remember, but he was there probably 10 years.
So you were kind of like a father to him, to Tom, weren't you, in a way?
Oh, yeah. Well, he won't even talk to me now. Mary calls out there to try to talk to him. He won't talk to us.
Yeah.
So he was a strange person anyhow.
Well, Oh, I remember him buying you that wheelchair that one time. We were at some convention. Was it Abbott's? It seemed like you had like a, not a wheelchair, what I'm trying to say, just one of those mobile scooters or something, didn't he?
Yeah, no, we rented it.
It's okay, okay.
Yeah. And,
but you had helped him then, help build the bar, I guess,
built
basically?
It. Yeah, I built everything in there, all the gimmicks and everything.
The sound and all that stuff, which was long before we had MIDI.
Well, now, he had somebody else do the sound. I didn't know anything about that.
Okay.
But I thought that was amazing, the sound, the way he controlled it. Propped on the bar, he could control a reel-to-reel and tape.
Right.
He had tape for each effect that had music, you know.
Right. So it had to be timed just exactly.
Oh, yeah. Well, I made him little drawers that had the cassette and the gimmicks in there. So he'd just pull it out and put it on the Savant, put the tape in, and gimmicks he used, and he put it back in there, and it was ready to go again.
Right.
I think the cleverest trick he had was the bar was divided in the middle with a 4-foot place that he worked, and a stool on each side. He said, always sit a lady. So he had a lady to select a card and sign it. Well, he palmed it out and give it back out of the shuffle. He bent down and put it on a fishing reel. The waitress pulled it down to her. Yeah, put it in a napkin, took it up to the bartender on this end. He put it in under her drink. And when she couldn't find the card, he said, it's under your glass, and she'd pick it up, and it was there. I thought that was the greatest trick.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Well,
it
sounds like they're obviously getting the show good right over here. So good to see him again, my friend. Thank you very much. I appreciate your time. Well, here we are at the Comedy Bar, and they're getting ready for the rest. This is Scotty out.
I'm new like you.
All right, this is Scott Wells. We're here on the final, after the evening show, the Saturday night show, and here kind of with the pizza party with Steve Beam and Tom Vorjahan. So, what?
I was just chatting with Steve. The pizza thing seems to be working. One of the things that we're missing.
Have they not done this in the past?
No. Ever since we left Gatlinburg, and Steve he'll hype on this forever, for God's sake, if we let him have the microphone. Ever since we left Gatlinburg, you used to walk out of the convention center through parking lot of one of the hotels, and then you get to this pitch black alley. And you'd walk up this alley, and off to your right was a room behind one of the hotels, and they'd let us have that all night. And people would sit in there, major performers and guys that are just learning, and just to hang out.
Yeah.
And we've tried to recreate that atmosphere in the Ramada lobby for years.
Because it's kind of just a block away, kind of.
Well, and it's mostly,
down a mountain, yeah.
Yeah. Well, Smoky Mountain. We're in the Smoky Mountain.
And so you know, so we entice magicians with food. It's I guess they're mostly Baptists. So
we can be bought.
Yeah.
Yeah, pizza is all it takes.
That's why there's no alcohol.
Pizza, Coke, exactly.
Gotcha.
BYOB.
So, good point. I'm going to get my wine here over here. Grab this. Okay, so I'm good.
But, yeah, it's good to see everybody as a wrap-up because it seems so dead. You know, it was horrible to have the dealer's room go until late, so we started closing it at 6.
Well, that was another thing. Yeah, the dealers closed at 6. Not just closed. I mean, they were up and gone. Out, gone.
Yeah, yeah. We went in. Yeah, it's nice to have it all clean so we can sit up there. But we've tried doing stuff up there. You know, we're always searching. We're always searching for what. So this might work.
What do you think, Steve?
Food. I'm all for it. Food's a good thing. And more than 3 times a day is even better.
I'm with you on that.
Cards is really all Bean lives for.
Pretty much.
Well, let's kind of talk about also just a wrap kind of the convention itself. Give me, in your opinion, then some of the highlights.
I think the highlight, the highlight tonight was a stage show that had a juggler at a magic convention where the juggler didn't steal the show. Michael Finney did.
Wow.
Yeah.
That was insane.
Yeah, I mean, that's very unusual. I think that was as good as I've seen Finney. He was absolutely hilarious.
Brought tears to so many people's eyes. He was hilarious.
Incredible worker. And, I mean, I think to me that was the highlight.
Yeah.
Well, when I walk up to him and he looked at me and he goes, I said, Steve, I told him, I said, Michael, I just love watching your stuff. And I said, you're funny every time. And he looked at me and goes, Tom, I really had fun out there tonight. Well, he goes, I didn't want it to end. And that's a heck of a statement.
Well, you can tell that the way that, you know, he was, it seemed so natural.
I said, you could tell.
When he was, you know, talking to the audience and the kinds of things. And you could tell also his timing and his pauses and everything to show the professionalism.
And he was worried because it went a little longer than we planned. We planned about a 90 100 minute show.
And it went.
And it went every bit of 2 hours. Yeah, and a little bit over. And I said, trust me, I don't think anybody cared.
Yep.
No, very good. Very good.
Now, the final act of the Rhythm of Magic, you know, these guys were new to the convention over here.
I think they have a very unique way to be able to present magic. You know, the
in
hardest
a dance style,
and I'd like to see more of it. You know,
more dancing,
more of the woman,
more Jessica. Yeah.
You know,
we saw a lot of her already.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah.
I mean, I don't want hate mail from him and everything. I think it's an act that needs a little more direction. You know, I think one of the hardest things for any illusionist to do is to talk and come out. And for a magic convention, I'll just be very honest. That was the wrong tricks to do.
Yeah, you know, that's part of his regular act that he would do for
and that's
lay
fine
audience.
For that.
Yeah.
You know, and you got
not a convention act.
You know, Dwayne did it. You know, Dwayne does a lot of talking in his normal act, and when he came in as a surprise act tonight, I went up to Dwayne. I said, "That's as great as I've ever seen you do."
It's as strong of act I've seen. Now Dwayne's been doing this for 2 years.
Well, the one downside was there weren't enough card tricks on the evening show. but other than that, it was pretty good. You know?
Remember, earlier when David Acker was performing, he said, no, this is not going to be a card trick you're going to see on tonight's show.
Good point.
Did you see his lecture? Yeah. Very good lecture.
Yeah. All the lectures were good, and that was nice,
nice variety.
And I know you're the one holding the microphone, but I think I was just telling him before you arrived here with the microphone that the night before thing was very good. The tonight show thing that you did, I thought was very good, because rather than see one more lecture or one more show, it brought in some variety and made it a little more interesting. So there was a fair amount of variety this year.
Yeah, you know, with a bunch of performers, and I've tried to explain to my other friends, you know, if you hang out with performers all the time, your conversations are over here. We're all animated. We all talk with our hands. We all have exotic stories.
Right.
Things gone wrong. I mean, there's never a lack of conversation between two magicians. You can run into a total stranger, and bam, you've got a conversation going.
Sure.
As long as they do any
magic. There's some commonality.
You're right. What a common thread. And it's just, you know, I think that is a fantastic way to start a convention with a talk show like that, because everybody wants to hear stuff like that. But more importantly, we've got to figure out other different things besides lecture, show, contest at a magic convention.
Lecture, pizza, show, pizza, show, lecture.
And more pizza.
More pizza.
And we could
discuss this.
And card tricks.
And we could, on the stage show, and we could discuss this over pizza.
Maybe we should have some more pizza if there was more of it.
And did I mention I'm lactose intolerant, so, you know. But I was like, we won't be here for the big load, the big finish, I guess.
Yeah. Well, that's a good thing.
Yeah.
With all that cheese.
Yeah, there you go.
Everybody kind of gets stoved up a little bit. Well, anyhow, as far as the opening night, I think it's a good idea. I like what you were saying, the concept, then, Tom, when we were talking about offering this, that everybody on the opening night would have an idea of who the talent was going to be, and a little bit about them, so it was an icebreaker, so people felt more comfortable.
comfortable going up and talking to Michael Finney or Banachek because they now knew something to say. Hey, I want to explore a little bit more. You know, this guy didn't ask enough questions. I'd like to know more about this or that or something.
Well, I mean, this is off topic what we're talking about, but while you were out on stage and I'm supposedly running production,
yeah.
I'm talking to the guys back there and I'm having my own interview with these guys before they go on. I learned stuff.
Much wore them out before they got out there to
yeah.
talk to Scott.
They were tired of talking.
That came through. I thought they'd already been drained by the time they got out on stage.
Yeah, I think exactly. of it as warmed them up. Yeah. So but we had some great
in the green room. Heat, so
yeah,
but
yeah.
anytime
yeah.
you can
yeah.
sit
yeah.
down,
it's a slow
heat. Anytime you can have the opportunity
the
to sit down, even with people like Beam, and have a conversation.
Even with Beam, yeah.
It's fun. I mean, what'd you do? You called me to give me crap the other day. We're on the phone for 45 minutes while you're supposed to be working.
Technically, I returned your call. So you called to give me crap first. I was just calling to give you back crap.
Okay. So there we go. But yeah, it's a. That talk show could have literally gone for hours and hours. I don't know if people would want it to, but it's a great idea.
Well, typically, whenever I do that, I'll have maybe just three guests, and that'll last an hour, because I'll talk with them a lot longer, for 15, 20 minutes each or something, you know, so that fills it up. So you know, by cutting it to 10 minutes, that's why, you know, sometimes less is more, and that was what a lot of people had said, is that we could have gone another 10 minutes or more with each of those people with some other questions, because there were some unasked questions, and that was why that I left it that way, so people then could ask them their own questions. They, again, felt comfortable, because now they knew them, and
yeah,
they could
idea.
Seek them out, and they knew what they looked like, you know.
You always, anytime you get one-on-one time or even small group, that goes right back to what we were talking about. I mean, I've got some lifelong friends from walking up that alley into that room.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
You know, that you know, we've
lifelong
been trying
might be a little bit of an oversell, but,
well,
you know.
Okay, for the last 15.
Okay, well, there you go.
How's that?
But also that there was such a good variety of lectures, I think, you know, that everybody, you know, whether it's coins or... Do we have any idea of cards? Maybe we need to have Steve Beam come back.
Not enough cards. And, you know, in fact, well, I mean, you had mentalism, you had a lot of coins.
That's right.
But not enough cards, never.
Well, we even teased when we put this one together.
He's
biased.
And see, that's a flaw with a convention, actually, you know, and probably the organizers.
Yeah. More cards. More cards.
Come on,
stage.
John Hopper over here. John is a co-convention chairman here with Tom Vorjahan also, John Hopper. So how long have you been involved, then, John, also with the convention?
He's an old-timer.
Oh, I've been with it 32 years.
So you've been almost all of them.
Yeah.
Just say five, I guess. Now, what was one of the highlights for you, would you say, that you wanted to see, or maybe something that surprised you?
Don't say card tricks, John.
Oh.
He couldn't because there weren't enough of them.
Oh, too many.
Too much.
I hate long card tricks. I fall asleep on those long card tricks.
No, those are not well performed.
You mean like beam card tricks?
Yeah. Yeah.
No, those were not well performed card tricks. There's a difference.
They were not automatic.
Right.
As I've told Steve many a time, some people do. Some people just write seven volumes.
And some just teach.
Or eight. You need to buy another one. Yeah.
The one thing about this convention that really impressed me was all the newcomers that we saw.
How many people did we actually have?
We think we had about 190 full-time magicians that registered for the full convention.
And then, so we had about 400 total here, right? Yeah, and then 200 who didn't register just snuck in.
We know of a couple that do that regularly.
Did you see what happened at the last lecture with Rick Merrill? Bargatze took his badge off, and nearly, as he's sitting here doing a bit with Merrill, nearly got thrown out.
By security? Because he didn't have a badge?
Not security. We policed it ourselves.
Oh, okay.
And some of our younger members who had no clue who Bargatze was.
Yeah.
Nearly tossed him. We had two of them ready to go, and I'm going, I was going to let it happen.
That's funny.
Friends like him who needs friends.
Exactly. So, John, tell me again. I didn't hear. What would you say was maybe a surprise or something that you were looking forward
all
to?
All the new people that
just
showed
the new
up.
New people, basically.
Yes. Because we put a red badge or red ribbon on
first-timers.
The new first-timers, and they were everywhere.
Yeah.
And that's encouraging to see new people coming to the convention.
Well, a lot of new performers. We had four new dealers. Wasn't it four new dealers that had never been here? Los Sander had never been here. H&R Books had never been here.
Yeah, that was Charlie Randallsford, I know, and Marshall first time.
Sure.
As well.
It was Marshall's first convention.
That's true.
And he can't wait to come back in 2 years. So that was really nice. SWC, it was their first convention. They want to come back in 2 years. And who did I leave out?
Yeah.
Harlan had been here before.
Dan's
Steve Varro from over in Nashville.
Yep.
And that's one of the things we try to work on, too, is keeping that as a mix so everybody doesn't have the same stuff, and it's also not just dealer items.
So do you have this as kind of a concerted effort? It's an intent that you try to have something different every year?
Yeah, there's only 14 dealer spots.
Right. Okay.
There's only 14 to put in there. We're full for next year. It's done.
We're already
for the year after that.
Yeah, because Daniel, I got Daniel Heron here then also, and you're the dealer chairman for the IBM convention, is that right?
As well as this one.
Yes,
so I get to pull from all the IBM dealers and hopefully bring some of them here and some that have never been here before, so I get to use that big contact list and help pull a different variety.
It's really been awesome. We've had great stuff for several years now.
Yeah, from all the dealers, different kinds.
Yeah, Daniel's been able to pull from them.
How many people, by the way, just as an aside for the IBM convention, how many dealers are you looking at this year?
We'll probably have around 30 to 35 dealers. It'll be 58 booth spaces with the size of the room, but it'll be about 30 dealers.
That'll be maxed out.
Yeah, that'll be maxed out. We're about half sold out now, and we've got some room, but, you know, they're coming in quickly, and once we get closer, it'll fill up before we know it.
John, I know that you and Tom are not the talent chairman, but do you have any idea or can you tip anything of who's going to be booked already for next year?
Mike won't tell us till he gets them.
I think Mike waits about a week before he starts trying to book it. It's getting very challenging and to try and find. You got acts out there, and then you hire the acts, and then you got to put together shows, and you got to put together a program. Mm-hmm. It's like working on a jigsaw puzzle, except
with
all
it. It's
very difficult to put together a congruent show when you kind of have to go out there and pick, and you can have acts that are booked. I know Tom Sony is supposed to be coming next year.
I thought he was talking about coming this year.
Well, he was going to come this year, but then he had things come up in Vegas.
Right.
Because we piggyback right after the other convention.
The World Magic Summit. Where,
yeah, so he was being honored there at something.
Well, so was Banachek. I mean, he flew in.
Yeah, but did you see how Banachek looked on that first day? Good thing we didn't have him working then.
Yeah, he was fired. He was bushed.
So,
it was a long day.
I think Tom Sony's one of the ones we'll have in next year. But, you know, it's a convention, and it's nice to have folks that will come in and not work for their full price for a convention. But at the same time, if you're going to do that, you got to be willing to let them go when they get a gig.
That's full pay.
That's full pay.
Yeah.
So, you know, I certainly can't tell you 366 days ahead who we're going to have next year.
Well, I just thought maybe sometimes if they have some people already booked that are like headliners or something. So
like I said, you know, Tom Sony felt horrible and has promised.
So he may have him next year.
Yeah, should have him next year.
Okay, good. But you guys did a great job.
Thanks.
And it was a lot of fun. It was a good convention.
I think we had the best Saturday night show we've had in a while.
This has been a great Saturday night show. It has. I think everybody was solid all the way through and start to finish. And so that's why I was telling Mike Stratman is just as good as any major convention, you know, evening show that I've seen. So it's a very, very good job. I thought Michael Finney just did a great job.
Well, we feel like we've got the best convention in the eastern United States.
We want to be at least the most hospitable.
Well, you certainly are. You know,
more pizza, more card tricks.
More pizza, more card tricks.
And we're there.
All right. Just leave it on that.
Yeah. All right.
As long as you can make them happy, you can make anybody happy.
You got it.
Yeah, being on the beam. There we go. Well, that's enough then for now. Hope you guys have enjoyed it. We'll get back to you later. This is Scotty out. Good morning, Scott Wells. And
Stephen Bargetti.
He's my co-anchor man here.
All right.
And I say anchor because the anchor means that's the thing at the very bottom or the very end. And so I had to reach all the way down here to pull him up by his bootstrap. Because we're here sitting on Sunday morning on these rocking chairs here in the lobby at the Ramada. And the night after the pizza party and the whole shindig's all now in the history book, so to speak. And you were not a part of this. You've been here, I guess, several.
Yeah, this is my family convention, Winter Carnival. I kind of grew up here as a kid. The first big first convention I ever went to. I came, I think, when I was 19 years old, and I'm 54. So you can, and I probably only missed a handful of them.
Yeah, and this is like a 37th one. So that's you've been to most all of them then. And when you've performed then in the past, I guess you've lectured and done everything else at the.
Yeah, and again, these are, like I said, these are the people that I know, so it's kind of like...
doing stuff for families, kind of like a Christmas party for the in-laws.
We know what that's about and stuff. But that's why I like to sometimes do the silliness and do some of the stuff where they don't expect and, they're not expecting to see the same stuff.
Well, you can get away with a lot more, with your family, sometimes. Because, that's just Steve, one of the boys. He's a little touch in the head.
Yeah.
So you can try something to see if it works or not, and what the heck, they still love you.
Yeah, that's right. And actually, that's exactly what we did here, because we are, I did, we did a little thing with Rick Merrill last night in his act, and we're not necessarily going to say what it is, but you could, at 4F, I'm sure we'll talk about this again, and we can talk about how it evolved from that to what we're going to do at 4F. But it was very much a beginning. And but we worked all out all the details last night, and this will be the first time in my history of going to 4F that I actually know what I'm going to do before I get there.
I've noticed after you get there, it seems like you pull a little bit of this or that. And that one year you had a video, and you were out kind of wandering around in the weeds or something, like a caveman or
because some guy had done a show on CNN News, and then he was a broadcaster from CNN, so he got interviewed from South Africa, CNN South Africa. So I went out in the Africa in the back of the hotel and filmed somebody. He won Magician of the Year in South Africa, and I was protesting it. I was some native out in the back in the woods.
So that kind of thing at the last minute, you just make up stuff. And sometimes that's about the most memorable and funny thing. In fact, I was talking to Steve Beam earlier. Remember back in 93 when we had the blizzard. Were you there that year?
Yes, I was. Okay. Yes, I was.
Because remember they added that additional night, and he was doing the snowballs.
Snowballs. And it's funny.
Leaking snowballs.
That's what everybody still remembers. It talked about that show more than what else was there. It was awesome.
Yeah, because sometimes, again, just to get an impromptu thing, and if you're creative, to come up with some sort of different idea. Speaking of creativity, do you tend to continue to evolve and come up with new ideas that you put into your routine? Or as far as your corporate work, are you still doing like the same show you've been doing for 20 years? Or how do you?
Yeah.
The thing you show the magicians are one thing. I assume for, when you're doing something for Loretta Lynn, that you're doing something different.
And you're right. Basically, the honest God, I don't think my show has changed much in 15 years, my regular corporate show and my school show that I do when I speak and stuff in colleges and high schools and stuff is every once in a while I add one trick. I got tricks that I can, excuse me, I'm sorry, but in the middle that I can interchange.
Yeah.
And but
you got a strong opening and finish, and then the
middle. Everything. And you know what? I really feel like my show is like a Jerry Seinfeld, or it's like a Andy Griffin show. That we've seen
a strange combination right there.
But it is. But you've seen all the lines. You know what Barney's going to say, but you're going to laugh anyway. And then you would be upset if he didn't say it.
Uh-huh.
And a lot of my clients, the plunger tricks and straight jacket tricks, if I don't do them, they're upset. It's just like
they expect it, and they want to show their friends how funny that was.
That's right. That's right. You got to see him do this, and then when you don't do it, and so if it's something to get into your act, you would know this as much as anybody. I mean, it takes a good time of a year before you even have time to make it funny. I mean, to where you can really add to comedy. You got to get the magic where the magic is there. You don't have to think about it anymore before you make it funny.
And you're focusing on the presentation and the interaction with the audience, what they're saying and your timing and all that.
That's correct.
Yeah.
And then, that's a lot of time you have to put in for a trick. I had that trick Silent Treatment, John Allen.
Yeah.
And I just came up with a way to make it do it. They could think of any card because I thought they couldn't see that little thing, so I made it a little bit bigger. And that's probably been 4 years now, and it's just now on the on deck circle. I mean, I can use it every once in a while. It's very funny, and I like it, but it's still, I'm not that 100% there with it yet.
Yeah, it's just the fine tuning and all that. Well, the two things you can never practice are timing and misdirection.
Right.
You can do everything in the mirror, but until you get in front of an audience and you see how that actually plays and how they react, it's that timing and misdirection that only comes with experience. And you have to do that over and over and over, and try and find the right venues to do it, and not necessarily in a well-paid environment either, because then they're expecting something more. So it's tough to find the right place.
But I think you're right too. Magic conventions are magic conventions, and I personally like to see it where it goes back to the days you know, Carol Fox. I mean, that's what I remember. Those guys, you saw, you didn't know what was going to happen. Something funny.
Every year.
Yeah, Williamson was going to do
and
something
Dixon.
Stupid.
Yep, yeah,
Dixon
yeah.
and stuff. And there's one, I mean, Scott's partly why I really like the little game show. It's not a game show, but almost
talk show
a talk show thing. Because, I mean, it's different and it's neat and it opens the door for some to give some guys some, to do what they want to do. So, I mean, my hat's off to you for that. I thought that was a great little touch. And the conventions, you know, we've been in this, a little bit of a rut for a while. So it's time for us to make some differences.
Find something new. I mean, you look at all the conventions and they, like this one and the TAOM and every other one, you know, proud of the history. It's like we've, you know, 40 years, 50 years, 60 years, or, you know, our silver end or whatever it is, you know, but it's the same one that they had done for the last several years. And if we're going to be attracting more of the youth, of the YouTube generation, I guess, you know, who are sitting behind their monitors, how are we going to be able to bring them in and have them interact and enjoy it?
Right.
You know,
right.
I mean, I think that the people that who are sitting at their monitors are kind of missing out on the opportunity of interaction with other people, and that's what magic is all about. The feedback, you know, that you get from the audience. Like Michael Finney was saying last night, the more you applaud, the more these guys are going to give you.
Right.
And that's exactly right, certainly. And if you're sitting in front of your computer doing something for YouTube, you don't see or feel the audience reaction of whether that they are really enjoying it or not. You're just putting
that's
it
right.
out there.
That's
know?
Right, Scott.
But I think we need to change up the conventions with a little something.
Right.
And just kind of, yeah, I don't know if it needs to be radical. It can be a gradual kind of a thing, you know, tweak this and that.
Yeah.
Any other ideas you would suggest or things you've thought
but,
of or seen
at
conventions you've attended?
You know what? I mean, this is something personally for me on conventions. And Magic Live, of course, is just something that everybody can learn
awesome.
From. Yeah. Magic in the Rockies. And one of the things I liked about Magic in the Rockies is the dealers aren't open 24 hours, I mean, the whole time.
Yeah.
And for the performers, these are our friends. I mean, these are the people that we know all the time and stuff. And they don't really give you enough time to hang with your friends and do it. But there, they actually create time where the dealers can, you get to hang out and you get to see your friends and see these guys. So if you got a friend, you know, he's got a booth, he's got to make money, so he's going to be in there all day.
Yeah.
And from what I've talked to those guys, they make just as much money by not being open all the time because the guy doesn't change his mind 100 times.
That's right. And come back and pick it up. And it's only going to be open X number of hours, and you get it right then.
That's right.
We were talking about the Blackpool Convention when it used to be like one day. I think it was Dan Harlan or someone was talking about it. You know, I wish they go back to the one day. And it's better for the dealers, too. It's like, you know, they got their money, you get it and go, you know.
Right.
But also, they just, everybody is there and having a great time, you know,
right.
in a short amount of time. But I like the hours being cut back. That's a good suggestion because it does give more time for you to kind of visit, you know, with Bob Little and Tom Bladshaw, who are in there, Lo Sanders, some of the guys.
Right.
I mean, those guys are in there working and pushing, you know.
Right, right.
But it'd be nice to sit down and chat, you know, more with some friends.
Great. Yeah, I agree. And the other thing is what we are trying to do. I mean, I think there's definitely, if we had added a little more fun to the conventions, and I think they sometimes are, but you can look at the lineup and you can just go, wow, Williamson's there. You're not going to miss it.
Right.
Because you know that he's going to do something and that,
right.
that you're not going to forget. And so, you know, people and stuff like that where you know how they're creating a good time.
Well, what are you going to be doing this year? You're going to be you working at any conventions this year? Your book so far?
Yeah, Scott. For some reason, you know, my life has been magic. It's always been up and down. It's not my main living. It's where I go to hang out with friends and do things. And it's just like, you know, I was always told you'd have a little ride and then it would be over. And I've had one ride, and then for about 3 years with my regular. Then I had another one as an MC for about 3 years,
mm-hmm.
and now it's all starting again. Just why I was here today, I've been invited to McMillan. I've been invited to Ireland, but what I am doing is me and Rick Merrill are doing Abbott's Close Up next week. That'll be next weekend, and then in April, me and Rick Merrill also will be traveling and going to Australia to do Steve Walker's little 3-day magic thing up there. So I got both of those coming up really soon.
It's going to be a world traveler to your more stamps on your passport.
Yeah. Well, I really enjoy, you know, Rick is a great friend, and we became friends before he got the big head and won everything. And so I can help bring him back down the earth. He's not near as good as he thinks he is and stuff. And sometimes I like to put double stock tape on one of his markers and stuff so they don't kind of slide out, you know, just to keep him humble.
Yeah,
you notice that pencil didn't come out too well last night. Yeah, I was laughing.
Steve Margetti.
The best thing is he don't know this hotel. He don't know now today, but we were sharing a room together, and when he got up to take a shower, I put the Bible in the room in his suitcase, and they had a little wooden book tell you about the. I put all the stuff you're not supposed to take from the hotel. I loaded them all in his suitcase, and I got up. He's taking them all home, so he'll have a quiet surprise when he get home. It'll be great. He stole a Bible.
Well, it's Gideon's. They want you to take
that's
that.
Right.
You know, Gideon's
right.
Checked out. Which
sure.
Left him no doubt. Well, as I start to close this up then, too, I know some people probably have had you in there speaking of the Bible and had you in their prayers about your broken leg and being in the wheelchair, you know, last year when we saw you at Fector. So tell me about your health situation.
Yeah, be coming up to a year, April the 8th.
Those who in the podcast land who may not know about it, what happened?
Playing golf, and an older gentleman came up from behind us and was in the wrong seat, was driving.
In a golf cart.
In a golf cart, driving from the passenger side. Panicked, and when he got about 4 feet from me, he slammed on the gas instead of the brake, and he pinned me and compound fractured my right leg. And I was below the knee,
mm-hmm.
and about 10 inches above the ankle. And it was a good 3 months without no weight on it at all, wheelchair and bound, and then very light. But I am still, I've had 2 surgeries since, and I've got maybe 1 more to go if things don't start happening right. But I would say I'm 75%. Good, and I can walk around and look good.
You're not
nobody can
like
know.
Cane or, I mean, that's right. You look like
I'll limp at night, or sometimes, you know, I've got, because the outside bones not together, it causes some pain in there. And I don't know if I'm going to have that the rest of my life or what, but the doctors say if that doesn't heal within the next three to 4 months, then we're going to have to do one more surgery.
They go back and re-break it or something? Or how are they?
He's going to do a bone graft and a plate and put it in there to hold it in place and stuff. So it's not, I definitely don't want to do that. So don't stop praying. And speaking of prayer, too, my son is in Afghanistan as we were talking.
Yeah.
And he does comedy. Just had his Comedy Central special that aired and did a great job. And so he's over there in Bahrain, and then they're going into Afghanistan. And both of those places are kind of hot places right now.
Well,
so we're really worried about, I mean, you know, concerned about him.
Sure. I understand. Well, thank you very much, Steve. I appreciate your time. And I know the podcast listeners always like to hear it whenever I chat with you over there. You're a great guy. Steve, thanks again very much. Safe travels back over there. And so, wrapping up, this is Scotty out. Scott Wills, what podcast would be complete if I'm at a convention with Banachek and I haven't had a chance really to chat with my buddy and business partner, best friend over here?
You've been so busy. I mean, you've been working your butt off here. You know, normally when we come to these things, I'm doing the shows and everything.
That's right, and I'm working
on it. You did a TV show kind of thing. Well, it's not really a TV show, but
yeah,
set up the interviews.
Talk show thing.
You lectured, you performed, so that was fantastic.
MC,
it's great, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah.
It was. I had a great time and a lot of fun, a lot of great people over here. And this was my second time. The first time I came, as I mentioned earlier in the podcast, was in 93 for the... that was the great year of the great blizzard that we've talked about. But this is not your first time here either, is it?
Unfortunately, no. I don't mean unfortunately about the conference. Actually, fortunately, it is my second time here. I love Gatlinburg. We always try to come out like twice a year.
I know
this is Pigeon Forge, but it used to be in Gatlinburg.
Right.
When I started out, I didn't know any magicians. I mean, I didn't know anybody. So most of my, almost
like every, you were 18. This was.
I was like, she's 16. Yeah.
This is funny. Pre Project Alpha.
Yeah, pre Banachek. I mean, Steve Shaw back then, and I was just starting out, and I did my very first show at a mall, Washington Mall in Washington, Pennsylvania. And what's funny is Mike Super told me recently he went back to this mall and he took a look because I had told him in my early show I did like 3 types of dangerous stunts. One was my Russian roulette with knives that I still do today.
Yeah.
And then the other thing was I also did a Monty acid thing with acid.
And, you drink acid.
I used real acid. I mean, I used real nitric acid.
Crazy.
I used real acid and iron filings in it. And one time I put the iron filings in and the acid came up all over the sides and it stained the floor. And I told him that floor had been stained the last time I was there years later, like 10, 12 years later.
Yeah.
And it was just a couple of years ago, about 2-3 years ago, Mike Super went there and he hunted and he said, it's still there.
Holy cow.
Yeah, it's still there. Now they're it's closed down and they're starting to rebuild the place. So, but I don't know if they'll put a new floor in or not. So, yeah, my mark's still there. But anyway, going back to the story, there was this guy by the name of Mac Picnic. And Mac was a really interesting guy. I didn't know Mac, you know. I didn't know any magicians. I knew a guy by the name of Joe Newsom, but that's another whole story. But Mac came to the show, and Mac had this little psychic rabbit. Well, he called it psychic. And it would do all these little ESP things, this rabbit he had trained it. Mm-hmm. And the big finale at the end was it would be open up an American flag, you know, to get that whole applause okay. And that. And then the other thing, Mac was always training new rabbits because his rabbit would eat the phone cord and die, you know. Yeah. So he would have to do another one. Yeah. He didn't want anybody to know. And I heard that
his wife would get pregnant. Well, the rabbit would die.
There you go. I also heard Mac used to take a vacuum cleaner and vacuum his lawn to get the pebbles out of it. So don't ask me. I have no clue what that was about. But anyway, so Mac saw me, and kindly enough, he came up and he said, "That was fantastic. That was wonderful."
At the mall.
Yeah, he says, "I got to book you at this convention." And you know, I said, "Well, what kind of convention?" He said, "Like for magicians, you know." Really? They have conventions?
Yeah,
you know. So, and I'm thinking, oh, my, you know, these are the top of the top, you know, and everything
yeah,
else.
Yeah, sure.
So I start getting more insecure and more insecure. So I start doing some research, and I find out there's a place called Lou Tannen's that sells magic. And I'm thinking, okay, they sell magic. They must sell really good stuff, you know, because this is where all the pros buy it. So I bought a whole bunch of ESP stuff from them. It was a big mistake back then. Not because it wasn't quality things that they do sell.
But you just bought it.
I'm just saying. I didn't know. You know, I did it at the convention here, and I bombed. I mean, it was so bad. Like, I used a slate and didn't understand because I'd never worked really lighting or anything like that, that you couldn't see it because of the reflection of the spotlights.
Yeah.
It was just one bad thing after another. And after that, I stayed away from magicians for about another 5 years. I mean, I was so embarrassed.
You were burned and just felt
so bad. Well, I
just
figured it's a magic convention. You know, little did I know, you know, I thought all the magicians in the world were there, so everybody in the world had just seen me.
That's one and only convention they all had.
Every magician in the world had just seen me bomb, you know? So
right.
I stayed away from the for years, which was good because it allowed me to be creative.
And develop your own.
Yeah, but I've always wanted to come back here and sort of redeem myself, you know, so to speak. So, and I think I did.
Yeah. So this has been the Shawshank Redemption.
Let's call it the Banishak Redemption.
Not Shaw anymore.
Banishak.
Banishak Redemption.
So, you know, it's nice. And you know what? The thing about this area is I love this area because...
You always had.
You go in the restaurants. You know, you get the young people, they come up, and they're just so sweet and so kind, and they can't do enough for you.
Right.
You know,
this is the home of Southern hospitality.
Yeah, unlike when you go to big cities, you know, I live in Houston, you go in a restaurant, it's like, you know, are you going to leave me a tip? You know, and it's like you see your waiter or waitress once, if that, and that's when you have to call, hey, can I have some ketchup? You know, yeah, I'll get it to you. And by then, you're done with your fries. Here, they cannot do enough for you, and the people are just really, really sweet and
Gatlinburg's
kind.
Beautiful, and it's beautiful, and aside from everybody being in there, a lot of things to do, and it's growing.
Yeah.
You know, I interviewed David Fee the other night, who is the probably second only to Dolly Parton as being like an entrepreneur, you know, in the area. You know, the other night I felt like
is
David...
Is that what we call them now? Is that what we're calling those things?
Both
entrepreneurs?
Of yeah.
Two of them.
Nice pair of entrepreneurs. They are. But at the talk show, I felt like David Letterman interviewing Donald Trump, you know. You really did redeem yourself, and I tell you, I've heard a lot of people say, you know, I've seen Vanacek. A lot of people were wanting to see you who hadn't, and they were not disappointed, and they said they're fantastic.
Tell you what scared me is I have my regular lecture that I do, you know, and I'm used to doing it.
Sure. Oh, this was a completely different lecture, yeah.
And I had lectured here for a friend of mine, John D., who does a hypnosis show down in Gatlinburg. If you're ever here, you should go see the show. And so I had told the Winter Carnival people that I would do a completely different lecture. And so I was a little afraid because it's not the lecture. I'm in the middle of a lecture tour now, and you know you kind of get into that groove. I was afraid that it would not be up to par of my other lecture, but it seems that everybody enjoyed it, and it was just, you know, it was up to par. So,
right.
Yeah.
No, it was, and in fact, Kathy was saying, gosh, you know, this is as good or better than I've seen him. I mean, you're always good, but it just seemed like that the way you were moving and hitting on everything, and you were in and out, and certainly left the audience wanting more. You know, your Q&A seemed to be on, and I thought the lighting was good. Maybe from where I was seated, as you were standing, you know, behind the table, it was as if that there was a glow coming from the bag and reflecting on your face.
Oh, yeah?
That came up. I mean, it was an ethereal sheen almost on your face that was coming up, you know, towards your. Might be something you might want to think about having some sort of little bit. Yeah, the hallucinogenic cigar I had last time.
Toadstools in the hill.
So yeah,
that moonshine. You were having a cigar
mellow
moonshine last night, right? Yeah,
it's the moonshine of the Tennessee. Yes. That's right. All right. Yeah, it's a Tennessee moonshine. Yeah, that was it. The mellow marshmallows. Any mushrooms.
I can't even say it.
Well, there was a mellow mushroom pizza place out over here.
Sure there was. That's what they're calling it.
That's right.
Anyway, I had a great time.
It was great. It was a good convention. It had a good lineup. A lot of diverse talent, not just in lectures, but also in the shows. And there was people here
that I hadn't seen for years, like Michael Finney. He was great. Wasn't he on last night?
He was on, and he brought tears to everybody's eyes. He always does, but even he felt comfortable. He said, man, I could have gone another half hour, because he was just jamming with the group and with the kids up on the stage, and it was so very good.
He's always a great pro. Yeah. I mean, he always has been. So.
But anyhow, thank you very much for your input, and I'm glad that, again, you've redeemed yourself and that you're going to go on to, maybe we'll hear from you in the future.
I hope bigger, better things. We'll come back here, just for fun.
I think the talk show is always something as well, because it's as fresh as the talent, that's booked, because
you're good at that. You did a very good job with that. So.
Thank you very much.
Well, thanks, guys.
Okay. And I think that's it for now. Scotty out.